Welcome to the Mind Money Spectrum podcast, where your hosts, Aaron Ogti and Trishul Patel, go beyond traditional finance questions to help you explore how to use your money to achieve the freedom you want in life.
In this episode, Aaron and Trishul discuss what you should look for when you begin working for a pre-IPO company and receive a grant of incentive stock options. AMT isn't a concern just yet, but your investment risk is significant. Between QSBS and 83B elections, there are a few critical actions you can take right away. But most of the time, a wait-and-see approach will work just as well. And now on to our conversation.
Hi, my name is Aaron Ogti. I'm a financial advisor in the Bay Area, and I'm here with Trishul Patel, a wealth manager on the East Coast.
Hey, Aaron, great to be here today, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
Great to be here as well. So today, I think we're going to have to break our topic up into a two or three episodes, but we're going to go really, really deep on incentive stock options, especially ISOs in private companies. This is one of the things that I help my clients with, and most of my clients are going through these issues. And the reason I want to kind of acknowledge up front, we're going to take the time, is because there is no like single piece of advice that everyone should follow. There's a lot of nuance and complexity, and I want to try and take the time to go through the potential paths forward at different stages, both stage of the company and stages that employees will be joining the company. And hopefully across these probably three episodes, try to give a really kind of overall guide of when I sit down with a client who has ISOs in a private company, here are all the questions that I'll be asking and all the considerations that I'm thinking about and trying to come to them with the specifics for their situation. So Trishul, I'm going to ask you to kind of buckle up and come along with the ride, because this is going to be the full gamut of the gray area. There's going to be some like you should definitely do this, some like definitely don't do this, but a lot of it's going to be, well, depending on your situation, risk tolerance, lifestyle, etc., here's one path. And depending on this other consideration regarding your risk tolerance, lifestyle, and here's another path that you can take. So is there anything that you want to make sure I address with ISOs in, not necessarily in part one, but over our next few episodes? Or do you want to make anything that you want to add? Because I think have you had ISOs before? I don't remember. I know you had options, but I don't remember if they were ISOs.
Right. Yeah. So I've had shares, or sorry, options. Yeah. And I've also had non-qualified stock options.
Okay.
And
okay.
Yeah. So not ISOs, but it's definitely an interesting area, and I'm looking forward to the conversation.
You know, that's a good point. The reason I'm bringing up ISOs specifically, I may end up touching on NSOs and RSUs and ESPP a little later, but this is more kind of from observation. Most early stage companies, most pre-IPO companies, issue ISOs. That tends to be most common. It's not until either a company is starting to be worth more, and you're starting to get into the 100K restriction on ISOs, and I'll explain that a little later, or the company has a liquidity event on the horizon, they start transitioning to either non-qualified stock options or non-statutory stock options, so NSOs, or they'll start using RSUs or other forms of equity compensation. But most of the time, most pre-IPO companies use ISOs at the beginning. And so that's why I'm choosing to focus on that, because that just tends to be more common with my clients and the conversations that I have. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it certainly does. And it is a common way, and it does provide a bunch of benefits from a tax perspective. So I can see why Why it is out there and it is pretty common amongst employers to help incentivize their employees.
Okay. So I think for the first part of the topic, we're going to kind of break it up into when you join the company versus when you've already been there. So when you join the company, it is likely that your ISO grant has a fair market value that is equal to the exercise price. And I think this could be one of my bad habits that I'm going to ask you, Tricia, to help me fix. I'm going to slip into jargon and language without realizing it. So I'll use exercise price and strike price interchangeably. I'll use fair market value and 409A interchangeably. So anytime you hear me say something like that, make sure to like interrupt me, pause, and I'll quickly explain it. So for those two terms, the 409A is an accounting term that private companies have to file of here is the fair market value of our company. Because it's not publicly traded, there's no market for these shares, they have to use this accounting valuation. So the fair market value of a private company with equity compensation is the 409A. That's the current fair market value of the shares of that company. The exercise price or strike price is how much you need to pay to buy each share. So this is kind of the really cool benefit of options is that you don't need to put any money at risk if you have the option. You don't owe any taxes if you have the option. You get to kind of wait and see. And if the company does well, you benefit. You actually benefit fairly well. If the company doesn't do well or never kind of pans out, you didn't put any money at risk. So that's the straight line kind of simple benefit of option. You have the right to buy the shares at this specific price, the exercise price or the strike price, and you can sell them in the future. And while that's the technical definition and that's really nice, everything else after that is where it starts to get complex. With options, when you're granted the options, you can just wait and see. Doesn't cost you anything. There's no investment risk and there's no taxes. But once you start exercising, the exercise is where the taxes start to get complicated. So with NSOs, it tends to be a little easier. The exercise, the difference between the strike price and the fair market value at exercise of NSOs is ordinary income. So later on, as the company grows, if you have NSOs and you started the company, it grew, you sold some share, you exercised later, haven't even sold, just exercised, that's taxed as ordinary income. And there's withholding requirements and it's taxed right away. With ISOs, there's no regular ordinary income for exercising ISOs, but there is AMT. This is alternative minimum tax. So I'll have to explain that in a little bit. But with an early stage company, the fair market value equals the exercise price. Well, it's kind of like the other way around. When you start at a company, the grant that they offer you as a starting grant, the exercise price will be the fair market value at the time that you start. There are ways that they can make it less, but it tends to be an extra cost to the company. There's even extra tax considerations and investment risk, and it's kind of so complex that if you're not like a C-level executive that's negotiating this, you're probably going to get a grant with the exercise price equal to the fair market value at the time you start. And that tends to be my clients. I don't work with the CEOs of startups. I don't work with the C-level executives of these pre-IPO companies. I tend to work with the regular employees. Sometimes there are some managers, some individual contributors, but they're W-2 salaried employees. This is their job. They're like, okay, I'm going to work at this pre-IPO company instead of this other publicly traded company. A lot of my clients are engineers. I think that's just part of my personality, but that gives you an idea of who I tend to work with. So our first conversation today, you've just started at a tech company. It's pre-IPO. You received a grant. The exercise price of all the ISOs is equal to the fair market value. So Tricia, is there anything that you're thinking of? Like, let's say you just started at a company. What's one of the things that you're curious about or concerned about, other than just kind of working and getting your job done?
Yeah. So what I'd kind of be looking into is, okay, so I've been granted these ISOs, and I'd be kind of interested in understanding at a high level, what is the vesting schedule for these ISOs? Meaning how long until I'm able to, you know, exercise them? And then how long until after that will I be able to sell them and actually get some money out of this? These are the questions that might be going through my mind. And it also might make sense to, you know, kind of throw in there's a limit to how much ISOs you can be granted that can vest in a given year. I believe it's 100K.
Yes. And that's based on the exercise price of the total number of ISOs. So that's good. If you are granted 100,000 ISOs and it has a strike price of $1 and it's all vesting in the first year, you can be all ISOs. But if that has a strike price of $2 and for some reason you have 100,000 shares, ISOs vesting in the first year, then only half of those could be ISOs. The other are automatically treated as NSOs.
Right.
This tends to be, I don't say it's not a concern for the employee to track. A company's gotten really good at knowing, here's all the grants we've given you. And so based on your vesting schedule, this next grant, instead of giving you 40,000 ISOs, we're going to give you 29,837 ISOs, and the remainder will be NSOs. And you get this like weird split, but they're kind of doing that for you based on that exercise cost. So I tend not to be as worried about that because the company is kind of taking care of that. Also, having that many vest in 1 year is, I don't want to say unusual, but we'll say we're going to go with a 4-year vesting schedule for most of our examples today. So you have to wait 1 year for the first 25% to vest, and then it's going to vest 25% each year. Sometimes they'll do it monthly, sometimes they'll do it quarterly, semi-annually, but for our conversation, it's going to be 25% vests each year starting 1 year after the grant date. This is also probably a good time to explain a couple of the details related to ISOs and kind of establish what we'll be using as examples moving forward. So with that vesting, and the benefit of ISOs is, unlike NSOs, when you exercise under normal tax calculations, there's no taxes owed when you exercise. Also, if you can follow a couple rules, when you sell those ISO shares, the entire value from your exercise cost to the sales cost is taxed as long-term capital gains. So with NSOs, we talked about earlier, the difference between exercise price and fair market value at time of exercise was ordinary income. If you then held on to those shares and it continued to grow, you would get capital gains from that fair market value exercise to that future sales price. But with ISOs, the entire value from strike price to sales price can be taxed as long-term capital gains. And so depending on your personal tax situation, this can save you on the scale of, we'll say, 5 to 20% in taxes. That's a pretty extreme range. Most of the time, we're trying to get like a extra marginal 12 to 15% benefit on by getting long-term capital gains instead of ordinary income or short-term capital gains. Now, the main rules that you need to follow is that the sale has to happen at least 2 years after the grant date and 1 year after the exercise. So the most common thing you'll see is the ISOs are granted, the first year vests 1 year later. If you were to exercise those ISOs as soon as they vest and then held them for another year, you've now satisfied 12 months from exercise and 2 years from grant date. So from a regular tax perspective, Tricia, do you have any questions? You understand kind of the rules you need to follow to get the long-term capital gain benefit with ISOs?
Right. So it sounds like ISOs have this favorable tax treatment. That's why everybody likes them. Mm-hmm. And the goal is to keep that favorable tax treatment, you know, try to play your cards correctly and not misstep. And if you do, then you would end up with the unfavorable tax treatment that you would get with a standard non-qualified stock option.
Correct. Correct. So it's, and this is one of the things that kind of plays out pretty consistently. If you can follow the ISO rules of exercising and holding, so, and get, again, 1 year from exercise, 2 years from grant date. If you can follow those rules, depending on how many options you receive and what the stage of the company is, what the growth of the company is, this is where we start to see you could be saving on the scale of hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes. This has played out. If you can get, say, again, you're not a super early employee, but if your options end up being worth $1 million, normally under kind of under ordinary income rules, you might be paying on the scale of half of that in taxes, especially here in California when we include the state taxes. So very roughly, you might be paying, say, 47 to 52%. And we'll just, for today's conversation, we'll just say half in taxes. But if you can get long-term capital gains, we can probably get that down to 35%. And so kind of combine federal and state taxes. So saving 15% on $1 million, that's your $150,000 in tax savings. That's a, I would say, kind of not common, because it's kind of, if you're at a pre-IPO company with ISOs and they do go public, it's kind of referred to sometimes as hitting the tech lottery. So I want to say it's common, but for those who do get lucky enough to be at the right company at the right time, this is where the tax savings comes into play. And sometimes you have to work there for several years. Sometimes you go to a startup, it doesn't pay off, and you've just collected your salary. But kind of, if you can plan correctly, this is the kind of tax savings that you can get through good ISO planning. Again, it's on the scale of $150,000 on $1 million. That has happened multiple times. So that's kind of why my clients come to me is, okay, I think I have ISOs. I think this company's worth something now. How do I start making sure to be tax efficient with these ISO planning, with exercise and sale? Does that make sense?
That sounds like a big difference and well worth the effort to, you know, just try to take the time to come up with a solid plan for something like this. So, you know, the way I kind of see it is with the non-qualified stock options, you have probably a higher tax burden. And the way that might kind of break down between the ISOs is, as you mentioned, there's three prices to kind of consider here. One is, what's the strike price? Mm-hmm. Now, let's say there's a quick example, it's $100. Well, in that case, you got to multiply that 100 by, you know, however much you're exercising at the time of exercise. and you got to put up that money, right? That's something you got to plan for.
Yeah. So I think for our example, we're going to we'll use kind of three stages of the company. One, you might have ISOs with a strike price of 3 cents per share. And this is usually kind of like founders' shares or really, really early employees, or sometimes venture capitalists or seed money. But these are kind of the first handful for like less than a dozen employees. They might be getting 3 cents per share. The next scale might be the next 50 to 100 employees, 20, depending on the company. But we'll say the next 50 employees, they're getting, say, 30 cents per share. So it's a 10x increase in the value of the company, but it's still really cheap compared to other publicly traded companies. So it's 30 cents per share. But again, no liquidity events on the horizon. Their company's not profitable. There's some revenue. But this is just based on kind of wild speculation by venture capital and private equity firms. The next stage might be kind of another 10x increase. So now it's at $3 per share. So at $3 per share, it's kind of, okay, if you're granted 100,000 shares, which is a realistic possibility, so that might be how you get, if it IPOs at $10, that 100,000 is your $1 million. That's a realistic number. So your 100,000 shares at 3 cents per share cost $3,000 to exercise. And most people who are earning a salary in tech in Silicon Valley, they can afford the $3,000. But the next level is that 30 cents per share, it's going to cost you $30,000 to exercise your 100,000 shares. And that starts to be a difference, because that's one of the big themes for these really early stage companies, is that the investment risk is really, really high. There's so many startups that just never pan out that it's hard to get like good data. It's kind of like trying to find data on hedge fund performance, because they don't necessarily have to report it anywhere. It's hard to find like good data on survivorship of startups, but it's something on the scale of like 2 to 20%. Maybe even, it could be even 1 to 20%. So the probability of reaching an IPO or liquidity event goes up the longer that the company's been around, the longer it's been profitable and growing and generating revenue, and gets closer. So like some of these might fail really early, but it was like a 1% chance they were going to succeed and got up to 2%, but then it never failed. So it's like, it's hard to provide good data and kind of an accurate probability. But at this stage, when you first join a pre-IPO company, it is a good planning strategy to say the odds that this company goes public or is bought out are low enough that any money you put into these options, you need to be willing to lose completely. It is truly speculation. And unlike a publicly traded company or a public stock where, oh, it went down 50, 60, 80%, like you still have something. Those are big ranges, but the S&P 500 can go down 40, 50% in a year, but it'll still kind of have a pretty good reversion of the mean. Some individual stocks, you'll have a wider range of outcomes, and some could go bankrupt. But to have a large cap company go bankrupt is really rare, less than 1%. But for pre-IPO companies, the odds that you get nothing for your stock are still really, really high. And so that's one of the themes I stress with clients, that any money you're putting in ISOs in a pre-IPO company, you need to be willing to lose. So when they first start, kind of most most people, you know, before I get to the next step, anything you want to add in or anything you know, question me about?
Yeah. So what's kind of going through my mind is I'm kind of pretending like I'm, you know, just joining this company, or, you know, frankly, even a step before, you know, what if I'm interviewing and I just received this job offer? How do I know if this compensation plan is competitive? Meaning, how do I value these ISOs? Especially since you kind of said they're typically granted at a price that's equal to the current fair market value, right? The strike price mm-hmm. is likely equal to the current fair market value, meaning that the price, if you were to exercise it, would be just similar to if you just went out and bought that stock today, for whatever the fair price of the stock is today. So, yeah, how do you know if that the amount of shares that you might get from the ISO is a good deal or not? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, I have some thoughts, but they're not necessarily going to be helpful. For most of my clients and their employees, that they don't really get a chance to negotiate, like the ability to negotiate it. You can't, there's one lawyer explaining, like, you have to be a heavy hitter if you're going to try and negotiate for more shares. They might make an offer, but they're less likely to negotiate. And also, the price per share, it's not a great proxy, but it's an okay proxy. That if it's 3 cents, it's super early stage, super high risk, but the cost wouldn't be that much. 30 cents, still super high risk, but now the cost is a factor. Then you go up to $3 per share. Okay, they are generating revenue. They might still be years off. The IPO still could not happen. But if it starts to get more profitable, so like there's a good spectrum of the lower the share price and the more shares you're granted, the more likely that it never pays off. Whereas if you are joining and you're the 500th employee and the exercise price is going to be $10 per share, okay, it might actually, the company might go public, but you might see it go from your exercise price of $10 per share to a IPO of $15 per share. So you only gained $5 per share. So like your benefit wasn't that high, and you might only get 20,000 options, but your 20,000 options at $10 per share costs you $200,000. So it's like it's kind of hard to put that much money at risk to only, I don't say only, but to gain $100,000, to gain like that $5 per share. And so the reason I say this is for the early stage where the potential payoff is big, the probability is really low. If the payoff is more likely, say it's greater than 50%, greater than 60%, the benefit might not be that big. So when you're going to work at a pre-IPO company, you can't depend on the equity compensation for your lifestyle at all. They need to pay you enough in a salary that you can live your lifestyle and still save for your future if the liquidity event never happens. And that's why I say, kind of, I do have thoughts, but they're not helpful, is that if you're looking at two offers, it's this kind of salary and what they're paying you in cash matters. And there's functions of the company has to have enough revenue and enough fundraising and burn rate. Like they'll manage this kind of thing. And so if they can pay you more, that might imply that they're a healthier company. You might have some marginal differences of, okay, this company's offering a salary of $200,000, but it's only 60,000 ISOs at $3 per share, whereas this other company is offering a salary of $200,000, but they're giving you 100,000 ISOs. I'm going to mix the numbers in my head. The 200,000 salary, 60,000 ISOs, or 180,000 salary and 100,000 ISOs at $1 per share. So, like, there's some marginal analysis to do. But at that point, just in terms of lifestyle, it's like, just which company do you think do you like working at better? Which company does the product excite you more? Which manager you like better? That's going to be a much bigger impact on your lifestyle. It's just which one's the better job. And so you don't necessarily need to go that deep into the analyzing the equity compensation offer. It could be because either the probability of it paying off is so low that you can't depend on it, or the option cost is already so high, so the benefit isn't that high. And realistically, if it's a $10 strike price and an IPO at 15, more likely you're getting NSOs or even just RSUs. It was like, okay, the RSUs are more like a cash bonus that could go up. It's not the same as with ISOs. And so it's like, okay, you can actually start to compare. Would you rather have a $200,000 salary with, say, 20,000 RSUs vesting over each year over the next 4 years, or $180,000 salary with 50,000 of RSUs vesting over the next 4 years? There's a little bit more on the equity risk, but the you might get 230 instead of 220. But that's kind of like what I say, it's a marginal analysis, and your feelings about the manager, who you'd be working for, the work that you're doing, which job excites you more, that'll be a bigger difference. That'll be a bigger payoff. So if you're analyzing it, don't go too deep into worrying about the equity compensation, trying to make a good analysis. Focus on all the normal parts of, would you like to work there? What is your role? Are you one person in a $2,000 or 2,000 person publicly traded company, and you like that? Okay, I do my job. It's 9 to 5. I get a little bit of equity compensation with RSUs, but I can still save for the future, and it's not a little stress. Or do you like the excitement of, okay, there's 20 of us and we're hiring 2 people per month or more, and we're growing fast, but it's kind of chaotic here. Sometimes, like, hours get weird, projects get weird, we're pivoting, we're changing. Like, which of those interest you more? Some people prefer the stability, some people prefer the excitement. That'll be a bigger difference.
That makes sense. That does make a lot of sense. You know, I feel like these days it seems like it's a pretty hot job market right now, right? But at the end of the day, you're likely, if it's like you're saying, established companies and the stock price is hovering close to a nice pre-IPO price, the offers are likely going to be competitive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe another trade-off that you might see as an employee who's doing some job hunting is, well, then it might be the difference between a more established company where you have a package that is kind of favorable, but, you know, maybe the upside is lower than a startup where you might be taking on a lot more risk. But again, that stock price is far below pre-IPO price. It's closer to that 0.3 cents or, you know, that $1 a share instead of that $10 a share. In which case, you might even be granted more of these options, but the risk is higher because, like you said, that there could be a pretty high probability to, or a pretty low probability, that is, that those options ever materialize into a liquidity event where you actually can take money out of the business.
So your assessment's correct, but in this particular conversation, I wouldn't use the word risk, because with options, you don't have to put any money at risk. So even though it's a lower probability of paying off, it didn't cost you anything. And so that might be the difference is you can't depend on the option. You can't depend on equity compensation either way. So does the startup just pay you enough to be able to pay your bills and save for the future? Kind of like you, again, because you can't plan on that. So don't sacrifice your lifestyle for greater kind of for more ISO shares at a really early startup. Like they still have to pay you enough for it to be worth it. The people who are willing to truly sacrifice their lifestyle for kind of super equity upside are the kind of entrepreneurial minded founders and super early stage where they're willing to live off of $30,000 a year because they're trying to get to $100 million. If that's your mindset, you're not looking to work at a company where, okay, what's the offer letter? What's the equity compensation grant that they're offering me? It's like, no, you're going to go start your own company to try and get to that stage. And that's why I say I don't really see those situations where they're giving up significant salary for significant equity upside. I tend to be focusing with, kind of, again, the regular employees where this is their job and they like the equity upside, but if it doesn't pay off, they still have to pay their bills. They want to buy a house. They have a mortgage that they want to send kids to college. So they need the salary and they'll save in their 401k. And so that tends to be kind of the difference that if you're not the entrepreneur yourself and you don't want to be, you want the income, you want the salary, then the equity compensation is kind of a cherry on top. It's not the main thing because the probability it pays off is so low. But I don't like to call it risk because it doesn't cost you anything. You can just, with options, you can always just wait and see. If the company pays off, while you might have a big tax bill down the road, you get that 50% tax bill we talked about, it's 50% on $1 million. So you still gained $500,000. That tends to be kind of a very, very acceptable path. If you're starting, you don't need to exercise the options. And if it pays off, great. If it doesn't, you haven't sacrificed or lost anything. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. You know, I'm kind of like reliving my career in my mind. Like, from my perspective, I've always done the startup thing, and mm-hmm. it's always been the earlier stage startup thing where I actually did have to make those types of decisions on, you know, do I go with a more established company, higher salary, probably higher probability of success with, you know, a more stable environment, or do I kind of go for a few home runs? And I think, you know, part of it may come down to personality, because I didn't really weigh the, you know, the cost benefit as you had implied as well. But I think I didn't do that because it's just been my personality to, you know, want to be in a very early stage startup. And for some reason, I feel like it wasn't necessarily the end goal of, you know, maybe potentially hitting a grand slam. But it was actually more just that ended up being more of a fit with my personality. I felt like, yeah, you know, exactly. I would just have that
even
opportunity.
After you achieved FIRE, you still went back and started your own company.
Right. At the end of the day, it ended up being those low risk options, you know, those low probability strategies where, you know, frankly, you know, prior to this company, I guess I might say I'm like 1 for 3. But, you know, that one made the other three worth it.
Yeah.
Or the other two worth it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I think another thing that might be going through my head is, well, okay, so let's say I do get these ISOs and I just started the job. And, you know, I get it now. I got to save up for the strike price or the exercise price, that is when I, or the strike price for when I exercise, sorry. Mm-hmm. So I got to make sure I plan for that. And are there any other planning steps I can do, you know, when I just first start working and then I'm granted these options?
Okay. So you just first start working. One thing that I always point out, and this is actually never from clients, when people reach out to me and say, hey, I have ISOs, I need some help with them, the company's usually grown enough that the ISOs are worth something. They're like, okay, I think this could be somewhere between a few hundred thousand and maybe a few million. Like, I have no idea, but there's enough money there that I need to start planning on this. One thing that whenever I hear a friend or a family member or even just like someone walking through the park that we end up kind of talking about what I do, if they're an IPO company, I always ask, do you know if the company is worth less than $50 million? Because if it's worth less than $50 million, you might be eligible for qualified small business stock, QSBS. And there's a lot of other rules, but if you own shares in a company worth less than $50 million, and you hold them for 5 years, and like there's several other rules and caveats that you need to research individually, they may be income tax free up to $10 million when you sell. And this rule might be changing on the Biden tax plan. It might be coming down to $5 million. But basically, if you own shares and you purchase those shares when the company is worth less than $50 million, and it does pay off 5+ years down the road, this could be income tax free. And it's kind of this benefit so great that the investment risk on those QSBS shares tends to be worth it. The big difference is you have to own the shares. You can't have options. Options are not eligible for QSBS. So if you have options and you're starting at a company that's worth less than $50 million, that's when you probably do want to exercise them. And again, because the company's worth less than $50 million, the strike price is probably really, really low anyways. So it might be those 3 cents per share. It might cost you $3,000, $5,000 out of pocket to exercise these. But to save, again, that in this case, if it went up to $1 million, you're now getting $1 million tax-free. And most of the time, if this pays off, the payoff is pretty big. But again, most people don't come to me. Most clients don't come to me because they have the QSBS shares. They come to me when there's something there. So this is something I just try to bring awareness of. If you're starting at a really early stage company, that might be a situation where you don't want to just hold the options, wait and see. You want to exercise before the company is worth more than $50 million. And again, that's the fair market value, that 409A. So that's one thing I look for is if you just started, is the company worth more or less than $50 million? Is it eligible for QSBS? There's more other rules, there's more complications, but if that's the case, it's worth it for you to do your research, figure out, okay, yes, the company's worth eligible for QSBS. What are all the other rules I need to follow to make sure I get this huge tax benefit? So that's one. The second is because the strike price equals the fair market value, the leverage is really, really high. And so the leverage, and again, the ability kind of to participate in upside without putting any money in is really worth it. So if it's not eligible for QSBS, the leverage would be a reason to just wait and see. Hold on to the options. And the idea here is, we'll try to make the math easy. If the strike price is $1 and the company is worth, and the fair market value is $2, okay, you have a $1 in equity per option. If the company value goes from $2 to $4, so it's 100% growth in the company, your equity went from $1 to $3. So a 100% growth in the company, you actually had a 300% growth in your equity on your option. Okay. So if the fair market value is close to the strike price, you have really high leverage, and you probably want to hold on to the option. You get to participate in the upside without putting any money in, and you actually kind of get an amplification effect. If it's later on, where the company has grown, your strike price is a dollar, company is worth 10. Now going from 10 to 11, so it'd be a 10% increase, is only an 11% return on your equity going from 9 to 10. So there's less leverage, so it's less reason to hold on to it just from that perspective. The other one is, I mentioned kind of the AMT with ISOs, and I'll probably get into this more in our next conversation, but just if you start, know that when you exercise ISOs, the difference between the fair market value at exercise and the strike price, while not taxable under the regular tax calculation, is included in the alternative minimum tax calculation. And so this is a scenario where you may owe taxes on shares that you haven't sold, and because it's pre-IPO, there's not even a market to sell them. You can't sell them. And so you need to be careful about what that bargain element is. The spread between fair market value and exercise price is called the bargain element. Sometimes also called spread. You need to be careful about that spread. Again, we'll get more depth in our next conversation. But when you first start, just knowing that bargain element could come into play in the future. And when you first start, there is no bargain element because your fair market value is equal to the exercise price. So there's no bargain element. You could exercise now without any AMT concern. So this would be giving up the leverage, but kind of, and this is where it's a kind of stage of the company factor and what your personal response is and how much money you can put at risk. So that's kind of thing where if it's QSBS, yes, you probably want to do it, given like double check all the rules, make sure you can qualify. If it's not QSBS and it's say 10 cents per share, and you have 100,000 ISOs, is it worth exercising, say, $10,000? Is it worth putting in $10,000 to try and save on AMT in the future? Maybe. But you have to be willing to lose that money. If it's $30,000, maybe not. But again, if it gets back to that, say, we'll say it's 5 cents per share, so it's no longer eligible for QSBS, it would cost you $5,000. The other thing, kind of early when you first start, is the possibility of an 83B election. This is early exercise of ISOs. So the idea is that you are going to exercise the ISOs before they have vested. So we said you got $100,000 options. It's going to vest over 4 years, so it's $25,000 per year. And the first vesting date isn't until a year from now. So it might be worth it to do an 83B election where you're going to early exercise all of your options. So one, the company has to allow it. So the plan has to be set up where it allows for these early exercise. You have to be willing to lose that money. So if we're going to do all $10,000, so it's at a 10 cent strike price, 100,000 options, even though they haven't vested, it might be okay to do the early exercise. You have to file an 83B. So it's a letter that you have to file with the IRS. Most companies will help you with that letter, or a CPA can help you, or a financial advisor can help you. But you have to file an 83B within, I believe, 30 days. I'll have to double check that. You file within 30 days of when you actually do the exercise. So it's kind of, you can't wait until tax time the following year. As soon as you exercise, you need to send in that 83B letter. But this would be the idea that you now own the shares. There was no bargain element because your fair market value is still at the strike price. but you've put $10,000 at risk. And this is still a really big risk. And so when you're starting at the company stage matters a decent amount, because if it goes up to 30 cents per share or 50 cents per share, which is still really far from an IPO, do you want to put $50,000 at risk for something that may not pay off? I mean, you might have that as a cash reserve based on just saving from prior companies and you earn a good salary, but this would not surprise me if it's most of the money you don't have in your 401k. Kind of, I see a few clients, like, they've already bought a house, so they've saved up for a down payment, they bought a house, they've been saving their 401k really well, they have a cash reserve of $50,000 to $80,000. They might have some small taxable investments outside of it. They might have been doing mega backdoor Roth, but like, are you going to take half of your non-401k money and put it into this company stock that could fail? Unless that's actually more likely to fail than to succeed. And so between the benefit of the leverage, so again, kind of like, again, that opportunity cost, like the $50,000 you could use to exercise, you could also leave it invested. This is kind of the way the leverage works. Like, that $50,000 can keep growing with other investments, and you still get all the upside of the company. The only thing the 83B does is reduce that potential AMT if the company goes up. And there's other ways to manage it. So if it's not QSBS, depending on the stage of the company and the kind of the cost per share and what total number of options you have and what you can afford to lose, most of the time I tend to recommend against doing the 83B election, because the money is either better served as a cash reserve or invested separately, and we can wait and see. It's like, does the company grow? Does it get more successful before we decide to put this kind of money at risk? Because we can manage the AMT a little bit down the road. It's becomes a complicating factor. But doing the 83B election of ISOs just to avoid that AMT concern is a bigger investment risk, and it gives up the leverage. I think that's why I tend not to recommend it, but I at least want everyone to be aware that you could do this. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Yeah, it's hard to say that early on whether it makes sense to exercise the options, because again, these options are typically at fair market value at this point. You just started the job. The company hasn't really improved drastically, you know, since you signed that offer letter. So it's quite possible that market price is pretty much at your strike price, and there's no real bargain element at this point.
Correct. Right. This is one area where the IRS does a okay job. I'm not saying the IRS, with the like tax code, of kind of, if the investment risk is really high, there tends to be a tax benefit. Like, they're not going to have you pay taxes on something that's not worth anything. But if it's worth something, then you have to pay taxes on it. So like, and you get to, with options, you get to wait and see. And that optionality is worth it from that perspective. So if you're just starting at the company, kind of the default of wait and see, is if the company grows, that's perfectly fine. Look to see if it's eligible for QSBS. If it is, again, the options don't count. You need to own the shares. So that would be a reason to exercise those options. After that, you could do the 83B election to exercise the unvested shares. But not only do you kind of have all of the investment risk of the company not paying off, you actually also have the forfeiture risk of, what if you don't stay at the company for 4 years? What if the company fires you or lays you off before then? Because if the company's not succeeding, it's layoffs are possible. They can't maintain that kind of payroll. So those are additional risks of money you put at risk. Now, usually the company would have some kind of buyout of the kind of what you paid for those shares, but that's not always the case, especially if the company's in trouble. They may not have the cash to be able to do that. So you might become a creditor to a company that's failing, which was kind of, sure, you get paid out for the equity holders, but then it might not be anything to pay out. But so that's why it's doing the A3B election. It's a lot of extra risk that tends not to be worth it, because the investment risk itself is already really high. This is money that you have to be willing to lose. You're giving up one of the benefits, which is the leverage that options provide. Again, instead of putting $50,000 in the stock, you get the same growth in the equity of that stock, and your $50,000 stays invested is also growing. So between the leverage, the opportunity cost, and just the odds of the company paying off, I tend to be against doing the early exercise unless it's QSBS.
Makes sense. Good stuff, Aaron.
So I think this is probably a good place to pause. I think the next stage will be you started a while ago and the company has grown. But any other questions for me for ISOs? You've just started a company, whether it's super early stage or even kind of middle stage, but it's still liquidity is not on the horizon, but it's kind of you received an ISO grant. Anything else that you were curious about or thinking about?
Well, I think we did cover a lot of ground on this episode, and I think the high level big picture that I kind of came with it is, if you're just starting with a company, you know, often you're just so excited you want to just go get going with your job. But it does sound like there is a few things to think about that are time sensitive with your compensation plan that it's worth taking a good overview and a good dive into to just make sure you understand what you need to do immediately and what you might need to do down the road to make sure that you're making sensible decisions, you know, from a tax perspective, but also from a perspective on, you know, just how much investment risk you're willing to take on.
Yeah. So I guess I think I have three main takeaways. One, look for QSBS. If it's eligible, you have to own the shares. Options don't count. Two, like when considering offers, the probability of it paying off is so low, make sure the salary is good enough. Make sure you enjoy the work. Make sure you like your manager, that you're not going to hate the company. Okay? So like, there's more things to consider independent of the equity compensation that are more important at this stage. And three, it really is okay to just wait and see. You have the options. The biggest benefit is that you don't need to make a decision. You don't owe any taxes. You don't owe any money. And so you get all of the upside of the company growing without having to put any money at risk and having to pay any taxes. So it really is okay to wait and see what happens and see if the company grows, and you'll get the payoff down the road, or it didn't cost you anything. I'd say those are probably my big three takeaways at when you first start.
Excellent. Yeah, that's good stuff, Aaron.
Okay, so I think next week we'll go into you've been at a pre-IPO company for a little bit, and so now you do have bargain elements. You do have that spread between fair market value and exercise price, but it's also the investment risk. The risk part has gone down a little bit. Where, okay, the company is more likely to pay off, and there's a few extra nuance and complexity here that we'll get into. But I love talking about this with clients. And again, some of these are hard decisions. And there's a lot of that complexity and nuance, but I try to summarize it pretty quickly for each individual client situation. So I have to be aware of all the things. I only present the things that apply to each individual client.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. And thanks, Aaron. I appreciate the deep dive on this. It was really helpful.
So one of the things that I'm curious from our listeners, if you have ISOs, or if you're looking at a company that's pre-IPO, I'd love to get just like more information on like offers and not like a Glassdoor database kind of thing. So I'm not going to get a sample size big enough, but just what are some other things that you might be seeing that I'm not at this point? Whether like, do they provide guidance on, is the company QSBS and you should exercise? But I know companies are going to be really hesitant to provide investment or tax advice, but maybe they just kind of say, hey, our company is eligible for QSBS. Or maybe they don't mention this that often. I'd be really curious kind of from more experiences for people when they first start at pre-IPO companies. Because most of my clients, they've already been there for a while, and that's when they reach out to me. So I'd like to learn more about those experiences of engineers when they first started pre-IPO companies.
Excellent. Yeah, we certainly welcome the feedback. And thanks, Aaron. I enjoyed the conversation. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
We appreciate you joining us today for this episode of the Mind Money Spectrum podcast. Be sure to visit mindmoneyspectrum.com to access the entire library of episodes. Remember, it's not black and white, but the wide spectrum of gray area where you get to pursue the freedoms you want in life. Opinions voiced in this material are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested in directly. Have a nice day.